Right. Good morning. I'm Erin Campbell, the Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget. And with me to present the February 2024 Budget and Economic Forecast, our state economist, Dr. Laura Kalmbakidis, and State Budget Director, Anna Menge. Our twice-a-year forecasts are efforts to predict what lies ahead. We analyze many data points in developing our forecasts, and they represent the best financial projections that we can provide based on the information available when we prepare them. Before we dive into the details, I want to take a moment to recognize my amazing colleagues at Minnesota Management and Budget for their hard work and commitment to preparing the forecast. And a huge thank you to our partners at other state agencies who provided the information necessary to complete the forecast. I also want to extend my thanks to all of you for your understanding and flexibility with moving the date and time of this forecast. We do have good news to share. We are projecting an improved budget outlook over the forecast horizon. If you recall, in our November 2023 budget and economic forecast, we highlighted the following 3 points. First, we had a U.S. economic outlook that had slightly improved. We also forecast a positive budgetary balance in both the current biennium and the next. And we saw projected structural imbalance. Those factors remain true, but with some important improvements that we'll talk about this morning. As I alluded to in the last slide, our budget outlook has improved, which is great news. Here are the top line numbers. For the FY24-25 biennium, we're forecasting a positive general fund balance of $3.7 billion. This is an improvement since November, up $1.3 billion. The primary change is that there are positive developments on the revenue side of the ledger over the forecast horizon. The outlook for the U.S. economy has continued to improve in the near term. Higher than expected corporate profits, in particular, are driving the projected revenues up from the November forecast. At the same time, spending is virtually unchanged in the current biennium and up only slightly in fiscal years 26 and 27. The result is that the structural imbalance in the planning years is somewhat smaller, but is not completely eliminated. The existence of a structural imbalance means that expenditures continue to outpace revenues generated during the FY26-27 biennium. This slide shows the budgetary balance in the current forecast for FY24-25 in the middle column compared to the November forecast estimates in the left column. The column furthest to the right shows the change between the November forecast and this one. As you can see, there's a sizable improvement in revenues, more than $1.3 billion. That's driven largely by higher corporate tax revenues. You'll hear more about rising corporate profits and tax receipts from state economist Dr. Laura Kalmbakidis in a few minutes. Spending is nearly unchanged since the last forecast, up $19 million. Our cash flow account remains unchanged, as does our budget reserve. If you look at the bottom line in bold, you can see that we now expect to end this biennium with $3.7 billion, $1.3 billion more than anticipated in our November forecast. This projected balance or surplus carries over into the next biennium if unspent this biennium, and that increases available resources for the next budgetary period. This chart shows how the FY24-25 surplus would impact the FY26-27 balance based on current law. On the left, the FY24-25 projected balance of $3.7 billion is depicted in the dark blue bar. If left unspent, those dollars will carry over into fiscal years 26 and 27. Moving to the right, we expect baseline expenditures in FY26-27 will outpace the revenues generated in that biennium by $636 million, as you can see in the light green bar. This number is smaller than it was in November due to a projected increase in revenues in FY26 and 27. When you add to that the $842 million in anticipated inflation in order to maintain the same level of services going forward, shown in the green bar furthest to the right, you get a total projected structural imbalance of nearly $1.5 billion. While a structural imbalance remains, thankfully, it is smaller than the $2.3 billion in balance that we forecast in November. After accounting for the imbalance, and provided the projected surplus from the current biennium isn't spent, We project a budgetary balance of $2.2 billion at the end of FY26-27, an improvement from the projected $82 million that had been forecast in November. As was the case in November, the surplus projected in this current biennium helps to mitigate the imbalance in the planning years. While projected budget surpluses in each biennium grow in this forecast, it is worth noting that caution should still be exercised this legislative session when it comes to ongoing spending. The existence of a structural imbalance will continue to be of note to our rating agencies, and the imbalance will need to be addressed in the next biennial budget. In order to protect the investments that were made in programs that serve Minnesotans, it will be important that policymakers exercise caution in enacting additional ongoing spending this legislative session. With that, I'd like to invite Minnesota State Economist Dr. Laura Kalambakidis to the podium to describe our economic and revenue outlook.
Thank you, Commissioner Campbell. Good morning, everybody. I'm Laura Kalambakidis, Minnesota's State Economist. I'll start with the U.S. outlook and how it's changed since November, move to Minnesota's economy, then turn to details of our new revenue forecast. Since Minnesota's budget and economic forecast was last prepared in November, U.S. real GDP has grown faster than forecast, including unexpectedly robust real GDP growth in late 2023, and financial conditions eased following the Fed's December meeting. This, along with continued strong U.S. employment growth, prompted S&P Global Market Intelligence, Minnesota's macroeconomic consultant, to raise their GDP forecast for years 24 through 27. The overall picture is, the overall story is, that in this outlook, U.S. economic growth slows, the unemployment rate rises as the labor market eases, and inflation settles at the Fed's target, allowing growth to persist through our forecast years. In this first chart, we're showing the S&P forecast for annual growth in U.S. real GDP. The green bars show the November forecast, and the dark bars show the history and the current forecast. The Bureau of Economic Analysis now estimates that real GDP grew by an unexpectedly strong 3.2% annual rate in the fourth quarter of 23, and S&P expects that strength to carry into 2024. S&P now anticipates real GDP will grow 2.4% this year, one full percentage point faster than in the November forecast. Growth in 25 is expected to be 1.6%, up from 1.4% in the prior forecast. Over 24 through 27, average annual real GDP growth is now expected to be 0.3 percentage points faster than in November. The next chart illustrates the federal funds rate, Fed's policy interest rate. The blue line shows the history and the February forecast, and the green line shows the November forecast. S&P now anticipates a monetary policy path that lowers the federal funds rate sooner than they had expected in November. In their prior forecast, S&P expected the Fed to raise the federal funds rate in December of 23. That's why the green line goes up, but that didn't happen. In their February forecast, S&P expects the Fed to implement a policy pivot and begin lowering the federal funds rate in May, followed by three more rate cuts by the end of this year and bring the rate below 3% in late 25. This chart illustrates the forecast path of inflation, the annual percent change in the consumer price index. Higher prices, including for food and rent, drove inflation to 8% in 2022. Declines in agricultural and energy prices, the resolution of supply chain issues, which had been exacerbated during the pandemic and at the beginning of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and action by the Fed, those things all together brought annual CPI inflation down to 4.1% last year. The dashed line illustrates the soft landing that takes place in this story, as inflation falls to 2.8% this year. In this outlook, a period of slower U.S. real GDP growth, so the deceleration in real GDP growth that you saw in the first chart, a rise in the U.S. unemployment rate, those things allow inflation to settle at the Fed's objective, and the Fed can hold its course. The next chart illustrates the forecast change for the dollar value or level of U.S. corporate profits. The dark line shows the history and the current forecast. The dashed line shows the November forecast. The gray bars indicate U.S. recessions. Focusing first on the history of corporate profits, the graph illustrates the significant run-up in profits since the pandemic recession, a period when U.S. corporate profits grew at a compound annual rate of 7.5%. This coincides with years when Minnesota's corporate tax receipts often exceeded our forecasts, even as we repeatedly raised those forecasts. Now look to the right-hand side of the graph to see the forecast period. The level of profits is now expected to be higher throughout our forecast period compared to November. S&P expects corporate profits will grow this year before experiencing small declines and pivoting back to moderate growth. The November forecast, the dashed line, called for a sharper decline and lower levels of profits in the out years. Minnesota's corporate tax applies to C corporations that do business in the state. So our corporate tax receipts are correlated with the U.S. profits, corporate profits that you see here. The next chart jumps ahead a little bit to our revenues, but I wanted to juxtapose that corporate profits picture with a corporate revenue picture. So this chart shows biennial Minnesota corporate tax revenue. The blue bars show the history, and the green bars show our forecasts for corporate tax revenue in the current and next biennia. So from the FY14-15 biennium through FY18-19, Minnesota corporate tax receipts averaged $2.7 billion per biennium. In the FY22-23 biennium, during that post-pandemic run-up in U.S. corporate profits, Minnesota corporate tax receipts were twice as large at $5.7 billion. In our current forecast, Minnesota's corporate tax receipts are now expected to average $6.2 billion per biennium in the current and next biennium. You can't see it in this chart, but as Commissioner Campbell mentioned, we've raised these forecasts since November, and I'll discuss the details of that in just a minute. Moving to Minnesota's labor market, this chart shows the official unemployment rate for Minnesota in the blue line and the U.S. in the green line. The state's labor market has eased somewhat from the record low unemployment rates and record high job vacancies that we've experienced in the last 2 years. But unemployment in Minnesota remains low, with a rate of 2.9%, 0.8 percentage points below the U.S. rate. In this outlook, S&P expects the U.S. unemployment rate to rise to a peak of 4.4% in 25. This is the rate that S&P estimates represents full employment, or a level of unemployment that will not accelerate inflation. We should expect to see Minnesota's unemployment rate to rise over this period too. At 68.1%, Minnesota's labor force participation rate is 5.6 percentage points above the U.S. rate and is the fifth highest among U.S. states. And as employers will tell you, we still have strong demand for workers across the state, with more than 2 job openings per unemployed worker statewide. A crucial variable in influencing Minnesota's individual income tax liability is total wage and salary income. As employers work harder to fill open positions and businesses make investments in technologies that enhance productivity, wage and salary income per worker, or average wage and salary income, is expected to continue to increase. In November, we forecast that total wage income, the sum of all wages distributed, would increase 4.8% in 2024. We now expect wages to grow 5% in 24 and decelerate to a stable growth rate of 4.2% per year for years 25 through 27. The demographic reality of Minnesota's baby boomers aging out of the workforce continues to limit employers' ability to add jobs. That slow employment growth, together with the stable wage and salary growth that we're showing in this chart, means that average wage growth, or growth in employment income per worker, is expected to be the primary driver of growth in total nominal wage income through our forecast horizon. Let's turn to the revenue forecast. The first 2 columns of the table show our current forecast for the current biennium and the forecast change since November, and the second 2 columns show the same thing for the next biennium. Total revenues for the current biennium are now forecast to be $1.343 billion more than the November forecast. Individual income tax receipts are now expected to be $449 million more than the prior forecast. We now know that income tax liability for tax year 22, so looking back to tax year 22, that's the base year that starts this forecast. We now know that that liability is lower than what we had estimated in November. So that lowers the starting point for the income tax. But we also have a number of one-time technical adjustments, which on net raise the income tax receipts in this biennium, offsetting that lower base year liability estimate. The sales tax is now forecast to generate $126 million more than the prior estimate. This is due to higher than expected net sales tax receipts so far in fiscal year 24 and a higher near-term forecast for taxable sales compared to November. For the corporate tax, a higher starting point for the forecast, also from higher receipts so far this fiscal year, and the higher expected corporate profits that I illustrated earlier raise our revenue forecast by $749 million over our November forecast. Total revenues for the next biennium are now forecast to be $907 million more than in November, primarily due to a large increase in forecast corporate tax receipts. You'll notice that in the next biennium, we have made a small reduction in the income tax forecast relative to November. That's lower because it has that lower starting point that I talked about, and it does not benefit from all of those same technical changes that raised the forecast in the current biennium. If you focus on the first columns for each biennium in this chart, the columns labeled February 24 forecast, and then look across for each tax type, you'll see that look at the dollar amount of revenue expected, so that first column, you'll see that all the major tax types grow from the current biennium to the next, and that reflects our expectation of continued economic growth. I'm going to end with reiterating some of the risks to this forecast. So the story that I've told you, the forecast story here is that the current baseline forecast assumes that the U.S. economy slows, as I showed in that first chart, U.S. unemployment rate rises, and the inflation rate falls to the Fed's target. S&P assumes the Fed's policy reversal, that first interest rate decrease occurs in May 24. International conflicts, for example, the Middle East, the Red Sea, and between Russia and Ukraine, those all pose risk to the inflation forecast through potentially higher shipping, commodity, and energy costs. If inflation persists above the projected level, the Fed may postpone that policy reversal or even choose to raise rates again, moving the economy off the forecast path. The federal government right now is operating under a continuing resolution set to expire very soon. S&P assumes a federal government shutdown will be averted with the passage of either a full year budget or another continuing resolution. But a shutdown, especially one that is prolonged or affects a large part of the federal government, would disrupt the economy. Regarding upside potential or an upside risk to the forecast, higher productivity growth, perhaps from investments in emerging technologies, could boost medium to long-term economic growth, even if additions to the labor force continue to be modest. And finally, with 17 months remaining until the end of the 24-25 biennium, even small changes in assumed growth rates of important income sources, including capital gains and those highly volatile corporate profits, can generate large changes in the outlook for this biennium. Even more, the difficulty of projecting long-range economic conditions and taxpayer responses to law changes warrants particular caution when using forecasts for FY26-27. I'll now turn it over to State Budget Director Anna Minky.
Thank you, Dr. Kalamakidis, and good morning, everyone. I'm Anna Minky, State Budget Director with Minnesota Management and Budget. Today, I'm going to walk through changes in the general fund spending forecast, and then I'll turn it back to Commissioner Campbell, who will give you an overview of our long-term budget outlook. So this table is one that may be familiar to you all. It lays out projected state general fund spending by major program area for the current biennium and the next, illustrating both total projected spending and the change from our previous estimates made in the November 2023 forecast. Looking at the very bottom line in bold, you'll see that total general fund spending is relatively unchanged from our previous estimates. We project general fund spending of $70.5 billion this biennium, a $19 million increase from previous estimates. That's less than 0.1%. In the planning years, we project the general fund budget to be $66.3 billion, $75 million above previous estimates, which is about 0.1%. So let's quickly walk through what's driving those changes. The first bill area, E12, education, that's the largest spending area in the general fund. We're predicting $37 million in higher spending this biennium and $121 million higher spending next biennium relative to where we were in November. As always, there are a lot of moving pieces in the education forecast, but the upward increase is primarily driven by higher projected spending for special education services. This is a result of higher than expected actual expenditures in fiscal year 2023 as reported by school districts. The special education funding formula is unique in that it's primarily driven by costs that school districts incur for the previous year. And those are costs that they spend administering special education services, things like salary and fringe costs for personnel. In 2023, school district costs for special ed increased by almost 6%. When compared to historic averages and more to that 3-5% range. And so that increase of the base and the sort of the projected rate at which we expect special ed services to grow. The next line, health and human services, you can see spending is projected to be slightly down, $10 million this biennium and slightly up, $17 million in the next. This is a very small relative change in a very large and fast-growing spending area. We are seeing higher spending on medical assistance, the state's Medicaid program, largely in long-term care services, but lower spending in non-medical assistance areas, things like child care assistance in the Minnesota Family Investment Program. In the first biennium, those sort of spending decreases more than cover the increases in MA, but in the outer years, the increases in medical assistance sort of outweigh the decreases we're seeing in other spaces. The next line, property tax aids and credits, the forecast is really flat from November. You can see the next line spending for state debt service on capital projects is projected to be slightly lower this biennium as a result of lower interest rates, and then slightly higher out in the next biennium as a result of a larger assumed bonding bill passed this legislative session. All other areas of the state budget are slightly lower than previous estimates. I'll highlight one change out in the planning years is that we project spending slightly less on metro mobility services as we project that they'll be able to bill more through medical assistance as they are a service provider for the state's Medicaid program. The last line I'll highlight is our estimate of inflation. As you all know, the expenditure forecast includes an estimate of discretionary inflation in the planning years. We refer to this figure as discretionary because in the 2025 legislative session, policymakers will decide whether or not to actually appropriate this money to address inflationary pressures. They may also choose to allocate it to other places or to leave it unspent. Our current estimate of inflation in the next biennium is $842 million. That's $38 million less than we projected in the November forecast, driven just by small changes in the consumer price index forecast. So all of those changes combined bring us to those total spending changes of $19 million higher in the current biennium and $75 million higher in the planning years. With that, I'll turn it back to the commissioner.
All right, this slide shows the long-term budget outlook. In the middle column, you see that with a beginning balance of $16.5 billion, revenues projected at nearly $61 million, and spending projected to be about $70.5 billion, we project to end this biennium with a net of $3.7 billion after you account for the reserve and cash flow accounts this current biennium. Moving to the far right column, we show that although spending in FY26-27 is lower than spending in FY24-25, we estimate expenditures will exceed revenue projections by in the out years by about $1.5 billion. We expect to end FY26-27 with a positive balance of $2.2 billion, which again is due in large part to the surplus from this biennium that would carry over into the next if left unspent. In summary, we've got a lot of good news in this forecast. The outlook for the U.S. economy continues to improve, and with it, corporate earnings and revenues. In fact, revenues from all major tax segments, individual income, general sales, and corporate franchise taxes are expected to grow. Forecast FY24-25 spending is virtually unchanged since our last forecast and is expected to rise only slightly in the next biennium. Our cash flow and reserve accounts are fully funded, and forecast surpluses for both biennia are higher than projected in November, provided they're not spent. While a smaller structural imbalance is welcome news, the fact that we continue to have a structural imbalance is something that policymakers will need to contend with, specifically as it relates to ongoing expenditures. But Minnesota remains on very sound fiscal footing, and projected growth in the national economy and in the state revenues picture is cause for celebration. We know the prudent policy decisions today pay dividends in the future years, and it ensure we can continue to provide needed programs and services to the people and communities in Minnesota. So with that, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Balance in the out years, Republicans are already calling it a deficit. Can you once again weigh into the imbalance versus deficit labeling in the projected out years?
We have projected surpluses in both biennia. We have a $3.7 billion projected surplus in FY24-25 and a projected $2.2 billion surplus in fiscal years 26-27. So there is not a deficit.
Structural, though. Balance. Is it fair that they're calling it a deficit once again?
No, that's not accurate.
Why not?
Because there are surpluses in fiscal years 24 and 25 and in fiscal years 26-27.
Can you then explain for a layperson structural imbalance, the difference between that and the surplus, or you know, not a deficit, because that's what the Republicans are keying off of. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
So a structural imbalance exists when the expenditures are greater than the revenues that are being brought in a particular biennium. In this case, we have projected surpluses that will carry over into the next year, and that mitigates the impacts of a structural imbalance.
If lawmakers were to spend most of that surplus or some of it, what does that look like?
It is still the case that the structural imbalance is smaller in 26-27 because we have increased revenues that are projected in corporate tax revenues specifically. So the structural imbalance would still get smaller. What it would do ultimately is deplete the surplus that's projected in fiscal years 26 and 27, that $2.2 billion.
So every dollar spent in this biennium is a dollar for dollar deduct from what's available to transfer over. So yeah, your structural growth, correct?
That's exactly right, Peter.
So to keep going down this sort of train of thought, there are about $1.5 billion worth of one-time things that could be spent on now, but if they're spent on now, that gets the state closer to a potential deficit?
Yeah, that is theoretically, yeah, accurate. Certainly policymakers would have to make decisions on how to proceed.
Where, is there a certain amount of money or a certain level of like increase in spending that before it tips over into a deficit? What is there a specific number for that? Or?
Well, they would have to, I mean, at this point, there's $2.2 billion, so it's projected to be on the bottom line in fiscal years 26-27. So if they spent more than $2.2 billion, it would then be projected to dip into the negative.
It sounds like there was potentially a calculation for a bonding bill this session. Was there a number attached to the potential size of a bonding bill?
There is. So we projected in November that we would be able to afford a bill that was $830 million. That amount has increased to $980 million. That is what keeps us in line with our debt guidelines, and that change is really because of, interest rates. Interest rates in being recalculated, just being slightly lower at this time.
Would that be your recommendation, that they could increase it now to that 980, or do you want them to stay down closer to 830?
This forecast assumes that there will be a bill that is $980 million. Those costs are carried in this forecast.
Wise, in your opinion?
I think that is just fine.
Commissioner, could you explain what the guidelines are kind of quickly? You're trying to figure out what your debt service could be or should be compared to what your revenues are projected to be. Is that what that guideline defines?
Yep, there are three separate debt guidelines. The first are really measures of the debt that we have been appropriated and or sold as a comparison to personal income. And then the third is really a measure of how quickly we're paying off our bonds. And the third guideline is the one that we are most concerned about at this point, and that is really to preserve future bonding capacity.
Structural balance count the reserve?
The reserve is fully funded at this time, and the reserve is only recalculated in November. So all of the numbers that you see here have the cash flow account and the reserve account fully funded and staying at the levels that they're at.
What about workforce and labor issues? I believe Dr. Case said that the labor market eases across the U.S., but what about in Minnesota? Because that's been one of the warning signs in a lot of these forecasts, that we just don't have enough workers.
I'll ask Dr. Kalmbakidis to answer that question.
Yeah, so the labor market has already eased a bit in Minnesota from the record low unemployment rates and the record high levels of job vacancies that we've had, but we still have a tight labor market in Minnesota where we have low unemployment and high demand for workers. So the expectation is that as the US economy slows and the US labor market eases even more, and that needs to happen in order for inflation to stay at the Fed's target, then Minnesota's labor market is likely to ease more too. So you should expect to see Minnesota's unemployment rate come up. However, we do not expect it to come up dramatically. We expect it to be a moderate change.
Still a concern in years past and forecasts that's been one of the warning signs in our economy.
The challenge in the labor market now, because we expect this slight easing but not dramatic easing, is supply of workers, and so that remains a limitation to businesses' ability to add more jobs because they're trying to find those workers. And so what we expect to happen in that scenario is that wages per worker are going to go up. We're continuing to have growth in total wage and salary income in the state, largely because per worker that income is going to go up. And that's because of simple supply and demand, that if you're on the selling side of the labor market, you can command a higher wage, but also because employers are going to continue to invest in productivity enhancing technology and equipment and processes that allow the workers to be more productive, and that comes with higher wage too.
Dr. Mate, can you talk us some real GDP? I mean, I was just looking at the January update.
Yeah.
I just had November compared to the January update had growth in this biennium going up slightly, but in the out bienniums they had it declining somewhat from November. Now they have them up in both of those budget periods within a month or two's period. Any guesses as to what caused that turnaround that quickly?
Yeah, one of the things that happened between January, so S&P provides us with a U.S. outlook every month, beginning of every month. And so they're only using the information, they can only use the information that's been released up to that point. And so between January and February, there was new information about consumer spending. Consumer sentiment went up. So U.S. consumers who have been spending you know, spending has, there's been strength in consumer spending, but sentiment went up. S&P raised their forecast for consumer spending from January to February, and that helped to boost their GDP forecast.
Continuing into subsequent months, they see that as...
So what they see is the deceleration, but continued growth. So the good news, continued growth. That deceleration is also good news because that's needed in order to keep the growth continuing.
Doctor, I'd like to ask you about one of the important risk factors, and that is this whole issue of inflation, the Red Sea, the Middle East, right? And if the Fed is forced then to raise the rate again to bring inflation down, and then the economic effects of that. Do we have a percentage chance of that kind of thing happening? Is it pretty high or pretty small? Is that information that's available to you in the forecast?
No, we don't have a percentage probability of these things happening.
Take a guess on, are we looking at a fairly high risk of that, or moderate, or fairly low?
Yeah, so I'll say two things about this. This glide path that we're on to sustained low inflation, so that low enough that the Fed doesn't react to it, that's a tentative situation. That's not something that we have seen. And it wouldn't take a lot to tip it, for a risk to tip it into a different scenario where inflation comes up, the Fed moves. It's a welcome but cautious, optimistic sort of scenario that we're in. And then I would say with regard to inflation effects, the direct inflation effects of things like the international conflicts will be more felt more in the surrounding areas. So if you're in the Middle East or if you're in Europe, you're going to see those inflationary effects before they hit the United States. It's a higher risk for countries that are closer to the conflicts.
It looks like
influx of immigrants to Minnesota.
So I can speak to, I don't know where the question came back there. Okay. Oh, hi. I can speak to the economy side. That you know, our demographic data are still catching up to what, you know, what people are seeing in their communities and on the ground, and so we have seen net international in-migration be a positive for Minnesota. It's what helps keep us gives us positive total net in-migration, and so when workers come to Minnesota. We just talked about the tight labor market. That can be really advantageous to our labor force.
Thank you for the time this morning.
Good morning, everyone. First off, thank you to this team that's up here who was up at 4 a.m. this morning. Thank you for your flexibility. As Minnesotans, we're honoring our fallen public safety officials yesterday, and so I thank all of you for your flexibility in moving one day. So we saved one day for good news. Our forecast is good news. Our economy is humming along. We made critical investments in our budget last year to grow our economy, lower costs for middle-class families, from tax cuts to free school meals to investments in our workforce and career and technical education. The largest investment in state history in infrastructure, from water treatment plants in Duluth to armories in Fergus Falls. More kids are eating school lunch than ever before, nearly a 31% increase. 200,000 kids have already benefited in the first month of the child tax credit, averaging about $1,400 per child. We're outpacing the nation in job growth, and we just outed Texas as one of the top five most best business climates in the country. We're going to keep building on that work. By implementing the new programs, ensuring we're delivering services to Minnesotans effectively and efficiently. Forecast doesn't change our focus for this session. We're focused on implementation and infrastructure. 2024 is a bonding year. That's going to be our focus. Now is the time to keep our eye on an economy that is steadily improving. watch our investments grow, focus on the work ahead of us in the bonding bill and a few key priorities. We're moving steady and responsibly. These investments in Minnesotans are making a difference. The programs that are being implemented are already proving that it works. And for all of you, I'd ask you, you'll go back and look at what we stood here and said in November. And the message was, the investments to grow a workforce, to make Minnesota competitive in all spaces across the spectrum, to focus on the five high needs area of work that we need in Minnesota and workforce, to make sure we're lowering the cost for Minnesotans, whether it's a child tax credit or child care, making sure access to high quality health care, and investing in education. When the headlines read that teachers received the biggest pay raises they've received in years, those are things that build that strong economy. So these investments are working, they're proving out. Again, for all the doom and gloom of November, it took us 3 months to reduce, to grow our surpluses by about a third, and to have our long-term projections that I remind everybody in this room. Many states do not do this. We project out to the next biennium, and we even take into account inflation. And so certainly grateful. Minnesotans are growing businesses. Workers are continuing to see wage increases. We're seeing inflation start to be tamed. We're seeing a business climate of investment in clean energy, clean technology, bioresearch, all growing in Minnesota, which is all positive. So really grateful for the work of this team to put this together. I think the numbers speak for themselves of a humming economy, an optimism. And when I looked at this, my thing was, is that that is morning in Minnesota. And that's where we feel right now, coming out of a pandemic, coming out of a global recession or potential for a global recession. Minnesota is well positioned for a future economy as any place in the world. And we're making that case. This is a destination. We are the star of the North. We kicked off this week. We're going to be advertising in states across the country. Come to a state where you have the opportunity to grow, thrive, be yourself, free of interference, whether it's in your bedroom or with your children's education. All of those things make Minnesota a great place to be. So be glad to take a few questions.
Governor, the projected, and you mentioned we're unique in projecting, but the projections still have a structural imbalance technically projected, which Republicans are already calling a deficit because Democrats.
Well, they are wrong. That is incorrect. They told you in November that this was catastrophic, and the first thing we should do is cut meals to our children and cut taxes for the wealthiest corporations. Nothing could be further from the truth. It took us 3 months to reduce that by 33%. This is projected 4 years out. The growth model will be there. We do that to get an idea where things are at. There are so many variables that go into that. The bottom line is we have surpluses on the bottom line. We have responsible spending. We have cut costs of living and taxes for the middle class in the largest tax cuts, from Social Security tax cuts to the child tax credit. So again, very simple. They're going to come in here every time and tell you, oh, we've got to cut spending to the middle class. We got to cut corporate taxes. The fact of the matter is corporate profits are at an all-time high, and the tax rates for many of those are less than 5%. This is a model that shows when the middle class has an opportunity to thrive, when college is affordable, when folks have access to capital that they need to invest in their businesses, you see this growth. We're getting to the point right now is we got to have some folks quit rooting against Minnesota. This is positive. This is good. There's never been these forecasts where the long-term things don't fluctuate a bit, but this has improved dramatically, and that was what we stood. And I know that you will reflect that accurately in your stories, that the governor said it will be a significant improvement by March, and here we are. When you heard on the other side, this will continue to deteriorate, and we can't afford to do these programs. We can't afford not to attract top talent, to invest in research, to invest in a clean energy economy, and to rebuild infrastructure. We're not going to go back to Fergus Falls and tell them, no, we're not going to build that armory. When we've got Dilworth looking for a new fire hall to make sure that our first responders are protected, those are the things people expect us to do. So, Director is there.
Could you tell us whether your message to the legislature has changed from December? I tweeted out just the basic numbers, and someone replied, uppercase, fund the teachers. So there's spending demands out there.
Well, first of all, my message is what incredible partners we have, and a thank you to the legislative leaders who put forward a program that improved lives across Minnesota, that put us into this strong position, who made the investments in the middle class, who were able to get good things done. Oh, and by the way, doing really important things that weren't budgetary that are going to make a difference in the budget, like protecting reproductive freedoms, like making sure we're doing those things necessary, making sure we're tackling things like gun safety. So my message to them is, look, we had an incredibly successful and transformational legislative session. The impact we're going to feel both economic, culturally, socially, and for individuals is going to be decades long. We're already seeing the building of the economic might that was behind this. And my message is, we need to implement these things. We need to get them right. This is a bonding year. We have some more space in there on bonding, and I would assume that they will want to do that because these are important projects. But we're still going to stay in that very, I think, focused and narrow space that this year it's to get those things done. Let's see where we're at. We'll be back here in November, and that will give us a wonderful leg up as we look forward to the 2025 budget year, where we can really think about what we need to tackle. So I think.
How much spending are you comfortable signing?
We'll have that budget out. We'll have the budget out in a couple weeks. I told you we would wait to see this. I saw these numbers at 6:30 this morning. Thank you very much. As I'm briefed on this, my team has been digesting those. Certainly we have straw budgets that we put together about certain things. I put out in November that it was about the $82 million level that we were at in about 8:30 on the bonding. We'll take a look at that. Just caution, as you saw this, caution that revenues and spending are pretty close to balance. 0.1% change, is that correct? Okay, that we saw, that I think, again, I would focus like we did much on last legislative session, focus on a lot of one time looking at that. Certainly here, that the need is still there. I don't wanna dismiss that there's more that we can do. But I think it's important to have a systematic long-range approach to this. And so my message to them is still, I'm going to stay very close to those original numbers. We'll get to see now. Our budget will come out in the next couple weeks.
This forecast presumes a larger bonding bill. Are you planning to propose a larger bonding bill, and how might that
work? Well, we'll take a look at it, I think. And I just want to say this. The bonding bill is, I think, so great because it gets such bipartisan support. And I've heard from some of these legislatures, Democrats and Republicans, that they were looking for a little more space in there. I've always said that the bonding bill and the robustness of it, staying within our borrowing limits, understanding that interest rates potentially coming down gives us some more space. I'm certainly open to hearing them on that.
Local project?
I think that's probably where they would go. I'll leave it up and we'll work with our partners in the legislature, but I think those are things, those are one time, those are responsible things. Those do not add to that structural imbalance in any way. And I think those are the things we should probably be focusing on.
Yeah, but it made it to your desk, and it was a dollar amount that put us above the amount that you'd be comfortable, you know.
Yeah, I'm spending. Not going to take a hypothetical now. I just, again, got these 2 hours ago, but we're always open. I think you've heard me say this up here, and I think it's the way legislators should be. Absolutes before you have a time to draw things through, but my if there's a line in this is, look, this is responsible budgeting. And the one thing I would ask on this is, it's not theoretical that you're hearing from the other side, if we cut corporate taxes, this will happen. You've got 5 years that this administration has budgeted and continuously had balanced budgets with tax cuts to the middle class, with investments that we have not seen in generations in Minnesota, all with balanced budgets. So I would just tell you, you can rest assured we'll do that same thing again.
School lunch program, there's been some crunch there, you know, in terms of expense being higher than originally projected. Is that an area that you would see that you'd like to put some additional money in terms of your supplemental budget?
Yeah, I said that's the hill I'm going to die on. Our friends on the other caucus said that's the place they're first going to cut. Again, it's a very small piece of all of this. The issue there is more kids are using school meals, which we know indicates more. We're getting better attendance. We're getting better ability for students to learn, better ability to self-regulate. We're hearing from across the state how popular this is. And again, when Minnesotans were asked if they liked this program, 80% said we love this program. So you can rest assured we'll keep going there. And again, in the midst of what we're talking about is that is a slice of investment that is going to pay off for us in the long run.
Governor, what about labor and workforce shortages? Those have been concerns in previous forecasts.
Yes.
It sounds like nationally and in the state that eases a bit, but you're going out and marketing. Talk about how much we need people here and how you get them here.
Yeah, and again, this is not anything new, and we see it globally. We see it here. Demographic changes, demographic patterns. And again, you see who's moving into places or whatever. From an economic perspective, if you're seeing seniors or retired people move to southern states or whatever, certainly, that's a choice they can make, but that's not a workforce development. What we're making the case is if you want to have a career and you want to see what it looks like to live in a state that's prosperous, moving forward, tackling innovation, We're going to have to do that. I think a concerted effort. I thank the legislature again, the money they put into the Minnesota Investment Fund, the money that they put into job growth, our focus on, you know, these five major industries. I was down in at Geotech in Stuartville 2 days ago. These are the folks that make composite fiberglass arms for power poles. Those are usually wood. With a changing climate, we're seeing those things come down. We saw ice storm in Worthington a few years ago, pulled down a mile worth of those. This is a new way of looking at that. They are high-tech manufacturing in Stuartville on these, selling globally, and we're focusing on whether it's healthcare, whether it's first responders, whether it's skilled labor. We're focusing on the training, the workforce, but we're also making the case to folks, come here and enjoy that. It's going to be important.
And that specifically, you mentioned some of the progressive policies that you see as an attraction here. Can you talk about that and how you're marketing the state that way?
Well, certainly we're marketing as a top five business state. Our climate is good. You're seeing corporate profits are up at record levels. That's a good thing. That means they're working on it. We're making the case both from a child care affordability perspective, trying to lower the cost of housing, making sure you have access to paid family and medical leave. And just to be very candid on this is, we're not in putting government in between you and your doctor. We're not telling you who you can marry. We're not banning books. We're focusing on feeding our children and getting great teachers paid a fair wage in those schools. And I think when people start to hear that, that's a contrast. And I'm hearing it when I'm out there and I'm telling you, we're sitting down, we're making calls, meeting with folks who are, we're getting leads from people and say, hey, this company's looking at settling in Minnesota. Will you call them? Absolutely. So every week I'm calling these folks and saying, here's what Minnesota has to offer, and that's how we're selling it.
One more quick thing on that, IVF, you talked about your personal story. Can that be part of the attraction to Minnesota now, those concerns about reproductive health?
It sure the heck better be. And again, this is when someone tells you who they are, believe them. It's outrageous. We in Minnesota will continue to protect, to make access to reproductive and contraceptive care. Because again, I said last year, they'll come for the next one. Trust me on this, not being... being able to predict the future, but it'll be reproductive care and those things next. This is a state that we're not interested in doing those things, and it's going to start to make a difference. So, yeah.
I think you said you're assuming no government shutdown, right? But it's been punted essentially a week. Are there things, in case there is a short government shutdown, that you're doing
to help let these folks
for programs, workers, residents?
Yeah, we always have things that are automatically in pace. Revenue knows what they need to do and what they need to pay. I will re-emphasize that again, that lack of Republican leadership in the House of Representatives is absolutely unacceptable. This continuous revolution to shut down. Again, that's right. I think those are things that another reason to be a little bit cautious. The absolute ineptitude of the House of Representatives under the leadership. We don't have a farm bill. We don't have some of these things done, and I think that's where Dr. Klamakidis made note of that. Those things can be disruptive. Here in Minnesota, as far as the cash accounts, the cash flow accounts and those things, we do have enough that we plan on it, and it takes quite some time before we have to go into extraordinary measures. I don't want to speak for you, Commissioner Marquardt, but you've taught me well, a good teacher.
In corporate profits, are you happy with where the corporate tax rate is right now?
Well, that's kind of a tricky one. The study came out just this week and said the average corporate tax rate for some of the largest companies in America is 5%. I don't know when workers that are, caring for our children or caring for our seniors are paying 16%. But I think we struck a pretty good balance. I think it puts to rest this myth that there's an overtaxation, this constant thing, that's the only way to attract business. Because here in Minnesota, we're seeing that our corporations are outpacing, their profits are up, they're excelling at this. That makes sense that we're probably in about the right place. So look, I'm not interested in raising any of these things, but I'm certainly not interested in lowering them because I think we're finding that right space.
Have any proposed tax increases in a supplemental budget to raise revenues?
We'll get it out. I am, I want to be cautious about it. It's disingenuous before we hear things, but I can tell you from our perspective and our budget, no, we will not. We think we're in a good spot. I think the Social Security tax cut, the child tax credit, some of those things make great sense to us. And I think the investments that the honest folks who worked hard in the legislature to make sure infrastructure investments, that those were ongoing, it makes sense. So I think we're in a good spot.
You had 14 protesters climb over your fence last night. Do you think that Minnesota should have an official stance on the conflict in Gaza?
I don't respond to the safety and security personally on my family, so thank you all. Thanks, folks.
Good morning. Today's improved budget forecast shows that Democratic leadership continues to have Minnesota on the right path. Our economy continues to outpace expectations, and our financial future is stable. The budget the Democrats enacted in the historically productive 2023 session has laid the groundwork for long-term prosperity, a growing middle class, and a future where every Minnesotan has the opportunity to succeed and build a better life. We have surpluses as far as the eye can see, though we certainly are cognizant of that structural imbalance in the tails. While our broader economic indicators remain strong and corporate profits are still soaring, we know that there are Minnesotans who are not doing as well, and that's why we'll continue to focus on cutting costs for Minnesotans in childcare, in housing, and in healthcare. And we'll continue to prioritize workers because we know prioritizing workers is the key to a long-term stable economy. Minnesota's workers outpace the nation in terms of their productivity. Labor force participation is very high in our state. You see that continues to be very high. Unemployment is very low. This economy is strong on the backs of Minnesota workers, and they are therefore our priority at the legislature. We will continue to make sure that they get the pay and the benefits and the working conditions that they deserve. The main focus of our work in the 24th session will be a capital investment bill. There are communities all over the state of Minnesota in need of local road improvement, bridge improvement, wastewater infrastructure, and the budget forecast says that we have the opportunity to do decent investments in our communities across the state. Now, with this forecast in hand, we will go back to our caucus. I speak on behalf of the caucus, have not had a chance to visit with them about this forecast in detail yet, except for a few texts from people asking for things. But to make sure that I'm in alignment with our caucus, we will take a look at the numbers, and then we'll spend a lot of quality time, Senator Murphy and the governor and I, in what we lovingly refer to as the Hotel California, the governor's cabinet room, where we will hope to come to early budget targets and have another productive and on-time finish.
Thank you, Speaker Hortman. And that's the first Hotel California reference that I've heard of, so I'll pack my bag. I was up early this morning before the sun came up, like so many Minnesotans, getting ready for work. And I always want to remind Minnesotans that my colleagues and I come to work here every single day with their lives and our future in mind. And I want Minnesotans to know that on this Good News Day, that we're going to continue to do the important work that they have sent us here to do to improve their lives and to build a future for everybody in the state of Minnesota. It is a good news day for us. This is a good forecast. It is a proof point of the work that we have done in this last biennium for the people of Minnesota. We see that this is a great place, Minnesota, to raise families, to run a business, and to experience opportunity and prosperity. And we're going to continue to work to improve the lives of Minnesotans. After years and years of gridlock, and listening to Minnesotans about the things that they have asked us to do, you saw us together put in place a budget and policy to support them, investing in childcare affordability, in healthcare, in schools, in workforce development, broadband, housing, and more. These are issues that have dogged Minnesota for years. And because of the gridlock of the 4 and 5 years before this biennium, we didn't make progress. We did in this last session, passing a durable budget for the people of Minnesota focused squarely on them. And we're seeing the results of that in this budget forecast. So we're going to continue to do the work that we're sent here to do for the people of Minnesota. We're going to do it with confidence and prudence, knowing that a structurally balanced budget is the foundation for the work that we're going to do in the future. And it is the foundation for the policies put in place meant to improve the lives of people of Minnesota. So, like Speaker Hortman, I will go back to our caucus. We will begin the work of the rest of the session. Capital bonding, of course, is at the top of the list, but don't sleep on policy. The work that Senator Seeberger has been doing on EMS is meant to reduce costs for people. The work that a number of our members are doing, whether it is Senator Bolden in reducing costs by attacking medical debt, those policies that we will see come through the session along with capital bonding are meant to make sure that the economy for the people of Minnesota works for them. That's our aim. I'm grateful to be here today. Thank you.
Any questions? Policy, bonding, what about spending demand for unmet needs? The governor mentioned maybe one-time spending would be the thing he'd still have an appetite. Do you share that? And what types of things might get that one-time spending this time?
I think that we share the objective of keeping long-term fiscal stability for the state of Minnesota. We have a very nice budget reserve that is, I think, as full as it's ever been. It's great that we have the 3.7 in the near term, but we have our eyes on that structural imbalance in the tail. So I do not foresee making any commitments to spending that we can't pay for.
And is it a deficit, by the way? Republicans have already put
It is not a deficit. This is so simple. We have $3.7 billion extra right now, and we have a projected $1.5 billion imbalance in the tails. That means if we don't spend any money this year at all, we'd have a $2.2 billion surplus.
The governor proposed $982 million in bonding back in January, and that is apparently what MMB is using for their figures. Would you be trying to go higher than that at any point?
So I would say that's not exactly right. So the governor had a proposal that was $830 in debt, but then also cash on top of that. So the new forecast, the guidelines, the debt guidelines have changed. So the size of the indebtedness part of the bonding bill will change. But also, we will now talk about whether there will be a cash component. We were not talking about a cash component in the House. I told our bonding chair, don't count on any cash. He would like some cash now.
Towards EMS, you mentioned Senator Seeberger's work on that, and they've asked for $120 million in emergency funding.
I think Senator Seeberger and others are working on a really important issue for the people of Minnesota, and it will be among the things that I consider as we move forward through this session. We're grateful about our position on capital investment, and I've also heard from our chair, Sandy Pappas, making her case this morning. That is the work that we need to do going forward now to make sure we are clear about what we want to do with this forecast and building on it. And this part is really important. We put a budget in place that's structurally balanced. I understand the political talking points about what that means, but for Minnesotans, it is really important that we're clear that we passed a durable budget. It is balanced according to the Constitution, and we have an opportunity going forward in the budget in the next cycle to continue the work that we're doing for the people of Minnesota. To say that there is a deficit is false.
Speaker, you have 53 members, I think it is, that have never been in the minority. And as a more veteran member, do you have to educate them on decisions made now can affect the election later in the year? Or do you have to do some tempering based on that, that they haven't been in the minority?
Well, I don't think that the work that we do at the legislative session this year has really a direct impact on the election. So, you know, I think a lot of times I've seen in the 20 years that I've served, I have seen people behave during session in a way that they think they're gaming the election. And the election has never been about what people think it's going to be about. So I think what we have to focus on is doing the work that we need to do for the people of Minnesota in a bipartisan way. It's not to our advantage to not include Republicans and do a cash-only bonding bill. It's not to their advantage to fail to participate in a general obligation bonding bill and try to show, you know, that the deals can't be reached, because the voters ultimately are going to cast their votes in November on issues that it would be hard for us to foresee right now. In 2019, we certainly didn't foresee the pandemic and the murder of George Floyd and the civil unrest, and that's what the election turned to be about. So I think that what I say to our 53 members who've never served in the minority is, you don't know how good you have it. Just, you know, the words Speaker Kurt Doubt I mean, let that sit with you for a while, but I don't think that they can really understand having never been there.
Is there a path forward for the public option for Minnesota Care?
Can you repeat your question?
Is there a path forward for the public option for Minnesota Care considering this budget picture?
So much work by both legislators and the administration taking a look at this public option has yielded for us, I think, a very strong potential path. And that will be the work of both the House and the Senate and considering what we got from the administration to figure out how we move forward. I think it's a really important question for the people of Minnesota. As I spent this summer, this interim, listening to Minnesotans talk about what they're experiencing in our current healthcare system, they may have coverage, but they can't afford their care. I think it's going to be important for us to consider the ways in which we can make sure that people have access to meaningful care. Public option is one of those routes. So we will be considering it. It is important, regardless of the forecast, that we find a path forward on that, from my perspective.
Speaker and Madam Leader, the governor is pretty adamant about school lunches and having that have enough money. Is that an area that, if necessary, would be, in your judgment, prudent and not pushing us into, you know, potential deficit or increasing the structural imbalance?
Well, I would say on universal school meals, we had a very strong agreement last year, which was why we moved out ahead of any other budget bill. And our commitment to continuing universal school meals is very strong. You know, I've talked to kids out there since we enacted it and asked, what do you think of free breakfast and free lunch? And what they would like us to focus on is improving the quality of the food that they're eating. They're very happy that they're not paying for it, but they would like more good choices.
More money is necessary to prop it up, you know, because demand is very high. You would both be amenable to that? Am I reading it correctly or no?
It's a forecasted program, so we won't have to appropriate for that. But there is nothing more important than feeding our children.
Corporate profits, are you guys content with where the corporate tax rate is right now?
Well, that's an interesting question. Go ahead.
You know, I think the forecast is showing us that corporations in Minnesota are doing very well. And they are contributing to our lives, and they are contributing to our economy, and they are contributing to the state's budget. That's important. That's good. I'm grateful that they are earning so much. I think the tax rate that we have right now is working for the people of Minnesota. And it's important, this part. At the end of last session, those who took a look at the work that had been done by our tax chairs and the tax code demonstrated that we moved policy to make sure that our tax code is the most fair in the state of Minnesota. That's good for Minnesotans, and we should always keep our eye on that.
When we passed the fix on the standard deduction, our tax chair gave a really nice speech about all the taxes we had cut for business under the leadership of, she was very kind, she phrased it as under the leadership of Speaker Hortman, the $2.7 billion that we put in the unemployment insurance trust fund and tax cuts in 2019, tax cuts in 2021. I think in Minnesota, we have to look at the difference between the sticker price and what's actually paid. So we have a higher rate, but we have a lot more deductions and credits than other states. So our effective tax rate is really right in the middle of the pack. And I think just as colleges and universities have looked at changing the sticker price for tuition, you know, instead of saying the tuition is pretty high, but we'll give you tons of financial aid, they're now trying to put out a number that more accurately reflects what students will pay, so they choose to go and they're not scared off by that sticker price. So I think we have to look at the effective tax rate and see if we can get the published tax rate to be closer to the effective tax rate.
How do you balance all of the competing priorities for additional spending? There's not that much to work with. You hear exercise caution, but there's a lot of people who are rolling out, I would like to make big investments in childcare or EMS, all these things. How are you approaching that from a leadership perspective?
Well, so the way we've always done it is I'll meet individually with all of the chairs, and they are supposed to be meeting with the DFLers on their committee and also in touch with their Republican leads to get the Republican perspective. We'll take all that input, we'll bring it to the negotiating table, and then I think is also true in the Senate, we'll have very long caucus conversations where we talk about our priorities together and the things we value. We had a retreat January 30th and 31st where we spent 2 days together coming up with our priorities. And so I already have a pretty good sense of where the caucus is. The things, so there's some things we didn't get done last year that are pretty important we'd like to get done this year. But it will be all of us together making that decision. Well, on my tiny little list is Agri. We kind of had an oops when we set the target in the tails for Agri, so we're a little short. It's not that much money. I want to say it's in the neighborhood of $15 million. We reached an agreement on PTSD benefits for police and fire, and we funded it in the short term. We're going to have to look at that cost data and see what the tails cost is. And but we gave a lot in LGA and CPA, local government aid and county program aid, and that's increasing over time. That's, you know, got an inflationary increase. So it may be that those things counteract the PTSD settlement that we reached last year. But those are my small things that I'm thinking of.
Getting together for budget targets, have you said, or do you have an anticipation of when you're going to release budget targets?
We meet with governor's team pretty much constantly, and we'll probably be meeting a lot more. The way we did it last year was we worked as hard as we could to get targets as early as possible, and I will endeavor to do that again, but I don't think we have a timeline yet.
What about attracting more workers here? The governor talked about a marketing campaign, and he hasn't been shy about saying, yeah, move to Minnesota to raise your kids, to have reproductive freedom, particularly as the country sees two female leaders. Those issues are back, reproductive care. Talk about how you market Minnesota and get more of those workers here the state still needs.
So obviously, the decision made by the Alabama Supreme Court on IVF is the next chapter in the debate started by the Supreme Court with the Dobbs decision on reproductive freedom. We know that it is a critical issue for Minnesotans and for Americans. And people are going to choose where they live. Especially when you think about young people, they're going to choose where they live, knowing what states stand for. And we've been crystal clear on this issue of freedom, on reproductive freedom. So I do think that that is an important factor as people make decisions about where they may go to school and where they set up their lives following school. That's important. But I think the good news of this forecast and what we're seeing happening as a result of the budget that we put in place is as important as that one question when we think about where you choose to live. I want to live in a place where I can raise my family, where childcare is affordable, where I can get access to meaningful health care, where the wages in my job support my family, where broadband means I can live wherever I choose to, the transportation system is modern and functioning and works for us. Those are the things that we invested in. Those are the things that Minnesotans asked us to invest in. And I think what we're seeing in this forecast is a demonstration that when we do that work and we focus on the people of Minnesota, we can build a future that includes everybody. And that's going to drive workers and people to come to the state of Minnesota.
Okay, time for one more. Madam Speaker, are you going to have the SRO bill up on the floor on Monday? Is that the plan?
We are.
Yeah, it's. I guess the hearing hasn't started in the Senate on that, but there's some equivocation on the part of some folks as to whether, in fact, that bill has support in the Senate, the bill that appears to be moving forward in the House. Did that concern you at all? I'd give the Majority Leader a chance to comment on that, too.
For sure.
I will just say that when I leave here, I'm going to go back to committee because I'm on the Finance Committee. So I'm going to be heading out of here soon.
Well, Tuesday night, we received a letter from law enforcement endorsing the bill as amended. And so we do expect bipartisan support, and we do expect that bill to pass off of the floor on Monday with bipartisan support. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if it had bipartisan support in the Senate. It should. It is a bill that law enforcement and members of the community, the cities, and education professionals have worked very hard on, and it's time to get it in the rearview mirror and get those SROs back where they want to be in the schools.
It could be a better bill. Any comments on that?
I think it's a very strong bill that has been the work of months by members of both bodies, the law enforcement community, by educators, by people representing students. I'm really proud of the work of Representative Frazier and Senator Bonnie Westland in bringing this together in a way that I think it'll become law.
Thank you.
In the Senate, Senator, or week after next in the Senate, are you thinking on SRO or, sorry?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. I am House Minority Leader Lisa Damoth, and today's forecast shows that we are still on the verge of a deficit. I know you heard differently, but I want to walk you through that process. That deficit is due to the reckless, irresponsible, and unaffordable spending spree last year. The state is still spending $1.5 billion more than it is taking in. When you look at your family budgets, if you are spending more than you are actually taking in, that results in a future deficit. So despite a continually growing economy, there still isn't enough tax revenue to meet the DFL's spending demands. This goes to show that we have a spending problem in Minnesota, not a revenue problem. Republicans have been warning since last session that this rampant spending will only hurt Minnesotans, and this forecast today does prove that. Minnesotans, especially small businesses, remained overtaxed and overburdened by the state. Last session, Democrats spent the entire $17.5 billion surplus and raised another $10 billion in taxes and fees on Minnesotans to fuel a massive 40% growth in government. It's time to cut spending and budget responsibly instead of trying to maintain the reckless spending from last session. Just in the last year, Democrats have sent $1.1 billion to unaccountable nonprofits and increased commissioner pay by massive amounts. Democrats are spending and are sending taxpayer dollars to their friends and political allies instead of keeping their promises to Minnesotans. As we cut wasteful spending, Democrats also need to keep their promises, including a full repeal of the tax on Social Security and sending the surplus back to Minnesotans. Family budgets and small businesses need meaningful tax relief now, and that's what Republicans are asking for.
Thank you, Leader Damoth, and thank you, for coming out this morning. It's great to see you here. I'd like to thank the M&B team too as well for the work that they put in this forecast. They really had to work overtime to make this look as good as possible. There's really no leaping over it. The tax and spend policies that Democrats have proposed over the years and put into law are causing our state to go into this boom and bust cycles. Democrats continue to entertain more spending this session. Well, state officials, as we heard today, are urging caution on our state spending. Meanwhile, Minnesotans are still struggling with $10 billion of new tax increases after last session, $10 billion to our families. Senate Republicans are working hard to repair that damage done by Democrats, and we're continuing that work this session. We'll hold the line on new spending and support modest, common sense bonding bill given that it doesn't max out the state's credit card, and also the substantive work within that is focused on Minnesotans. We saw the governor get a little defensive today, and we saw some legislative leaders get defensive and throw out a lot of red herrings and doublespeak on what actually our priorities are. But the reality is this is the forecast, looking forward, what we need to do in policy today to ensure that Minnesotans are taken care of in the future. And that's what we are committed to and working hard on every single day. With that, we're open to questions.
$830 million bonding bill, something you guys can get behind?
It's something that we will be taking a look at, given the other constraints that we have, the caution that MMB has thrown out as well. I mean, this is a forecast. There's no certainties within that. As we see, it continually changes. So we have to monitor that, but we want to make sure that we're doing the right things for Minnesota. Roads, bridges, water, infrastructure, those types of things. So we'll be taking a look at that.
Increased capacity that went up from 830 to 980. Are you willing to go up to that 980 now, you know, coming at nearly a billion again?
You know, we are, a historic bonding bill was passed last year. We know that. What we want to be a part of is the conversations in building that bill. House Republicans, as you know, bonding is going to start in the House. We are doing that work. The capital investment committees for both House and Senate have been across the state looking at important projects. What I can tell you is, even though we are not guaranteeing that there will be a bonding bill, we want to be part of crafting that language in the bill. No wasteful spending in there, staying within our means, roads, bridges, wastewater, those important infrastructure items with a statewide impact rather than just locally focused. One of the things, though, is with the potential increase, we need to be wise with that. We are not going to commit at this point whether we're going to go up. We are not going to commit that we'll even give votes for that, but we are looking forward to being part of the conversation and crafting that bill.
Where do you want to cut?
You know, I think very easily with the $1.1 billion to unaccountable nonprofits, that would be a great idea of looking at cutting and making those nonprofits accountable to the taxpayers that they've taken dollars from. They do great work, but there has to be a point of accountability. That's just a starting point of cutting.
And I'd like to add, too, as well, while we're talking about fiscal responsibility, ensuring that our budget is safe, Democrats are throwing out bills like Sanctuary State, which is going to put more pressure on our state budgets, whether it's schools, counties, state budgets. It's those types of ideas that the Democrats are running with that we're going to hold the line on.
That bill doesn't seem to have a whole lot of support across the DFL caucus. I mean, are there other pieces of legislation you guys could potentially point to that might warrant a cut somewhere?
You know, when you look to the north of the state office building, we have a $730 million new expansion of that building. We have asked repeatedly for those bonds originally not to be let. That was not through the normal process. That is wasteful spending right there. If there is anything that we can still do with our Democrat colleagues to scale that back, we would love to do that. There was yesterday in the bill introductions a bonding bill request to put more money into the tunnel to make it ADA compliant. I am all for making things safe. That should have been a part of the normal process of what they were currently doing. Right now, we have no tunnel. There is no ADA compliance right now to move from building to building. That is one area of absolute wasteful spending that needs to stop, scale back, and be smarter with it.
Senator and Representative, it sounds like they listened to you. I heard the MMB say spending caution. I heard the governor say we shouldn't spend any more money. Sounds like you convinced them. I don't hear them calling. The leaders calling for more spending. They listen to you, I guess.
If you remember last year as well, too, in the session priorities dinner that the chamber put on, you heard the governor say that he's a fiscal conservative and they're going to be restrained in their spending last year. What happened? They spent $17.5 billion of our surplus. They raised taxes by $10 billion. So the rhetoric does not always match the actions. And so we've got to be holding them accountable, and that's our job, and we're going to be working on that as Republicans.
Senator, you talked about a few weeks ago about eliminating the tax on Social Security, and you didn't commit to that. I heard that is a priority now. Did you change your stance on that?
On the Social Security tax?
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, you didn't fully commit to eliminating the state tax.
I don't recall fully committing to that because we don't have the budget for that right now. As we talked about, Democrats in the state have completely spent the surplus, put us into a structural deficit. Last year was a year to fix that. We had the money to do it. Seniors and those that use that could have actually benefited from it last year. Now they've taken that option off the table from us because we no longer have the cash to do it.
And that's another point of broken promises by Democrats. That was something that was campaigned on. That was something that was talked about. $2,000 back to families with the surplus, ending the tax fully on Social Security. Those are proof of broken promises that were made by our Democrat colleagues. There is not the money. We are looking at a deficit, as Leader Johnson said. It should have been done last year. It's something we will still talk about, but again, broken promises made by the Democrat majority.
Just to follow up on that, if I may, Madam Leader and Mr. Leader. You could get money for tax cuts by spending cuts. I mean, right? I mean, that's possible to do that. So why not pursue tax cuts rather than spending cuts or a combination thereof?
You know, I would say if it is a priority by the majority, With a full Democrat majority, House, Senate, Governor, if it is a priority, they will bring it forward. We need to reduce spending. We need to provide tax cuts, potentially, to make our state more affordable for all Minnesota families.
Any other questions?
It sounds like you guys have backed off using the word deficit to describe the budget currently. The structural deficit, I think, is all I've heard from you. Is that accurate, or are you still calling this a deficit?
It is absolutely a structural deficit looking forward a few years. You hear structural imbalance, but it is definitely going to be a structural deficit as we move forward with continued spending.
Looking ahead to next week, the DFL leaders just said they think there'll be bipartisan support for the SRO bill. Do you both foresee members of your caucus voting for that? Sounds like yes, but just asked, yeah.
So we want to make sure that the stakeholders are supporting that bill. I know some of the law enforcement community is supporting part of it. There's still questions about other parts of it. So we'll wait until we get a consensus from the law enforcement community and the education community and from our members before we start looking into that as far as a bipartisan bill. But right now we've got people working on it, and hopefully that's the way it ends up. This should be a bipartisan bill.
And in the House, Representative Jeff Witte has been an incredible leader on this issue as a former SRO himself, a 27-year veteran of the Burnsville Police Department. He has been an incredible leader working with law enforcement. Speaker Hortman did reference a letter that came out just 2 days ago from law enforcement expressing their approval and their acceptance of where we're at on the bill. We're going to be calendaring that in rules in just a couple of minutes, and then it'll be on the floor on Monday. I do fully expect that there would be bipartisan support for this bill in the House. Thank you.